गुरवे गौरचन्द्राय राधिकाय तदालय कृष्णाय कृष्णभक्ताय तद्भक्ताय नमो नमः. सो गुड मॉर्निंग All of you, welcome. Thanks so much for coming, and happy Sri Gopastami to all of you, among many other celebrations we are having today. And today is our last gathering, at least for me, in terms of the series of lectures we've had during the last, whatever, 3 weeks or so, talking about how to rediscover Krishna in our life. Which personally I feel it's a very important question to ask every day. Not only Krishna, how to rediscover myself, everyone else, everything in our lives. How everything can be rediscoverable, something like that. Like adopting a lenses to relate with reality as perpetually discoverable. Discoverable, able to be discovered or something like that. So, yeah, so far in connection to Krishna Bhagavan himself, we started originally with the premise, okay, Krishna is there, Krishna exists, he's a person, Supreme Personality of Godhead. We have a relationship with him, we are connected with him. But sometimes we may have ideas about the divine that are not so accurate and may need to be recalibrated or may have been accurate, but how to say, are no longer enough for the stage, I mean, in relationship with Krishna. As a mother can have an accurate idea of her baby, but when the baby is no longer a baby, somehow some of those ideas need to grow along the baby, so to say. So in the same way we mentioned how Krishna, despite being on one side changeless, he's always Krishna, he's always God, he's always made of Satchidananda, etc., etc. At the same time, he's constantly evolving in his experience of love, in his development of beauty. So he's becoming new and ever fresh at every moment. So how to keep pace with transcendence? Transcendence is always unfolding. How to continue relating to that? And how to have accurate ideas about God? Again, because sometimes we may have Shastra, we may have Guru and Sadhu, That's all we need in one sense, but how much we are relating to that accurately. So sometimes we may get inaccurate ideas about Krishna. We may develop ideas about God related to personal issues, unresolved trauma, childhood stuff, problems with parental authority figures that get in the way of the ultimate authority. And we may get the wrong sambandha. We may get the wrong orientation to the relationship with the divine. So if I have a wrong sambandha, a wrong idea about who Krishna is, for example, my avideya or my practice will be affected by my wrong sambandha. And the ultimate prayojan or the fruit to taste will be equally affected. So that's why sometimes, I don't know, not always, but sometimes the devotees may say, oh, I've been practicing for 40 years, 30 years, or I've seen some people doing that and somehow the fruit is not coming, or I'm not feeling anything. And sometimes, not always, but in many cases, the problem is maybe the sambandha is not accurate. So that affects the avideya and that affects the prayojan. So sambandha means not only your eternal servant of Krishna and Krishna is God. Next topic. No, sambandha is establishing proper relationship with all the aspects of Krishna and all the aspects of us in connection to him. Like one example that sometimes we have given these days is the wrong idea that Krishna doesn't love you and that you need to love him first so he can love you eventually. That's a wrong idea. So if we practice with that wrong idea, and I'm just mentioning one, wrong sambandha, wrong sense of relationship. Because yes, I'm servant of Krishna, Krishna is God. Correct sense of relationship. But if in the context of that correct idea, in the context of the correct idea, can have so many wrong ideas, right? I can say, Krishna is God, I'm his servant, correct. But in the context of that, I can feel, but he doesn't love me, and I have to struggle to love him first, so he does. No, that's nothing. That's not correct. You follow my point? So, not, despite you have the right idea to begin with, okay, Krishna's God, I'm his servant, that doesn't mean that all the other ideas that come from that are accurate. So we have to be able to unpack the implications of this idea, so it always remains, the Sambandha remains consistent, coherent, non-contradictory, human, healthy, sustainable. So that will take to a healthy abhideya, a healthy practice based on that knowledge and orientation, and then the fruit will come naturally, and it will be a sweet one to taste, so to say. So we start our series talking on that, talking on how Bhaktivinoda Thakur will say, when speaking about anarthas, he will say, the first one he will mention will tattva be brahma, right? Which means to have confusion about tattva, or about what is what, who is Krishna, what is reality. Sometimes we think anartha means only, okay, lust, greed, envy, anger, this, that. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur first speaks about having wrong ideas about things. Having wrong sambandha, having wrong sense of relation, that can be an anartha, because that gets in the way of your experience. If you have the wrong idea about Krishna, you have a wrong experience of the relationship with Krishna. If I'm projecting some idea on Krishna which is not Krishna, my so-called connection with him will prove whatever, traumatic in some cases even. So for me, if having a wrong idea about God is an anartha, then unlearning my wrong ideas and correcting them is anartha nivritti. One aspect of anartha nivritti. Anartha nivritti is not limited to chant your rounds and all your last greed and stuff will go away, but it's also, again, try to have the proper ideas about God. So on that basis, you can establish a healthy relationship. If not, that becomes an anartha. So anyhow, that's what we have been talking so far in terms of how to rediscover Krishna in our lives, how to allow Krishna to be all that Krishna wants to be. That's important. When Krishna is a person, the Supreme Person, and he wants to be someone for you in your life, as we are invited to be someone in his life. So Krishna wants to be someone for us in our life, and there's a lot that he wants to be in our life. Now Krishna would like to really relate to each one of us from a very intimate place, personal place, deep place, not just some formal thing. Okay, I'm your God, you are my devotee. Now offer your prescribed stuff per day. I like you, see you tomorrow. No, he wants something committed, intimate, personal. So he wants to give himself to us in a very deep way. But again, we have to allow that to happen, because Krishna is very gentle. Also, Krishna won't just like jump on you and force you to love him and here's who I am and how I want to be in your life. And that's how abusive, dysfunctional. So Krishna is very humble, very patient. He's waiting also for our own initiative, no? In the relationship. It's not just, okay, he has to take all the initiative and just wait on the sofa here and let Krishna make all the stuff. And whenever everything is, like whenever the food is ready, call me. No, no, you have to go and offer something to cut and to prepare. So it's a mutual, reciprocal relationship, right? So anyhow, these days we have been talking about that. And so today is Gopastami. I mean, today we are celebrating many things. Not only Sri Gopastami, we are celebrating Subal Bishmilan, this beautiful lila in which Subal dresses like Sri Radha, and they exchange clothes and so on, so she can escape the prison house and meet with Krishna, who is dying in separation from her. Also, we have the disappearance festival of Gadadhar Das Goswami, not Gadadhar Pandit, Gadadhar Das Goswami, another associate of Mahaprabhu. The disappearance of Dhananjaya Pandit, another associate of Mahaprabhu. The appearance day of Shyamananda, no, sorry, Srinivas Acharya, one of the famous associates one generation after Mahaprabhu, so to say. And today also is commemorated the Raghunath Das Goswami's writing of a book called Mukta Charit, this pearl story. Maybe you've heard about that. So there are so many things that we can go in different directions, but I felt we can go to Gopastami. And somehow I like to go through the Leela of Gopastami in the similar way like we did with the Govardhan Leela last week. That we try to narrate the Leela in a way that we can find the Leela relevant in our life. We can find teachings from the Leela that apply to our stage in the journey. So the Leela doesn't remain just like a nice story, but it's something that, oh, I can see how the Leela speaks to me. I find it relatable. Somehow I'm being part of that. I'm participating in a healthy, realistic way. So we'll narrate the Gopastami Leela in that mode, what I call through the allegorical eye, that you hear the story, do not take only literally, but you draw lessons from the narrative that are very applicable to where we are. And all this in the context of how to rediscover Krishna in our daily life. So Gopastami. Gopastami Leela is mostly described, not so much in the Srimad Bhagavatam. I will say that the book where you find the most detailed description of Gopastami, most beautiful in my personal taste, is in Jiva Goswami's Gopal Champu. It's a very beautiful book. It's kind of his re-narration of the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, filling in so many details and spaces and in between the lines, things that are not there in the Bhagavatam, but are there in Gopal Champu, which is basically like an amplification of what's in the Bhagavatam. Because that's an important point to begin with. Sometimes this is the Bhagavatam, and this is the Bhagavatam. But we hear from Jiva Goswami himself, for example, in the heavenly planets, there is a version of the Srimad Bhagavatam which has 400,000 verses. So ours has 18,000. So again, what's the Bhagavatam? What's the Damodar Leela? What's the Rasa Leela? It's just limited to those verses, or there's so much more happening that is expanded in other books, for example, which is the case for the Goswami's books. All the books that the Goswami's wrote are like extensions of the Bhagavatam. No wonder many of the books are called after the Bhagavatam. You have Srimad Bhagavatam, you have Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Sanatan Goswami, you have Lagu Bhagavatamrita, Rupa Goswami. Gopal Champu, again, is a retelling of the whole 10th canto with so many nuances, so many commentaries they wrote on the Bhagavatam. So all the books of the Goswamis kind of revolve around Srimad Bhagavatam, which is a central, decentral work for us Gaudiya Vaishnavas. So Gopal Champu, there we have Gopastami. So Gopastami has to do, as we will see, with Krishna becoming a cowherd boy. No more a calf herd boy, no? So transitioning from tending calves to tending cows. That's what's celebrated today, Gopa Ashtami. Today's Ashtami, according to the lunar position, half moon, like Radha Ashtami, Janmashtami, and Gopa Ashtami. Gopa means Krishna becomes a Gopa. No? Go means cow, and pal means to protect. So he becomes a protector of cows. So far before that, he was a Vatsa pal, a protector of calves. No? So Krishna has 5 years, Jiva Goswami tells us. Both Krishna and Balaram basically are, of course, there is a slight difference of age, but Krishna in particular has 5 years, so he's reaching the end of what's called the Kumar age. No? Krishna's unfolding, here we are on early Leela, right? We're not talking about Golok Vrindava, but here, the Leela on earth, Boma Leela Gokul. So Krishna is born, and Krishna starts to crawl, learns to walk, falls. All this like sequential unfolding that in one sense doesn't take place in Golok Vrindavan, because Golok Vrindavan, Krishna's Nitya Kishore, eternally a young adolescent boy. But here he's born, and so on, and all the things that happen from that moment. Like Kavi Karnapur once said, the whole Leela on earth, Krishna made it for Yashoda, so she can experience the joy of giving birth to Krishna, because that's not happening in Golok Vrindavan. So it happens here. It's a particular way of saying it, a particular perspective. Okay? He made it for her, so she can relish again giving birth to Krishna. So here on earth, in the Leela on earth, which is especially sweet and relatable for us humans, Krishna is born, grows, and transitions from one age to another. So there are three ages in terms of how Rupa Goswami and other acharyas divide them: Kumar, Poganda, and Kishore. So till the end of five, Krishna is kind of Kumar, which will be like, let's say, infant or something to that effect. No? So the next age after Kumar is Poganda, which is like childhood. So Krishna is transitioning at this moment between Kumar and Poganda, infancy and childhood, which will take to the transition between calf herder to cow herder. So I'll be sharing a few sections from the Gopal Champu directly from Jiva Goswami's work, so to also, for those who have never gone through that work, to have a glimpse of the sweetness of how he narrates these lilas. Welcome. So Jiva Goswami says, some brief excerpts. Krishna and Balaram reached the Poganda age and their intelligence increased. Krishna's blackness and Balaram's whiteness defeated their luster in the Kumar period, in the previous period. Their chests increased in size, and their eyes and other limbs became longer. Their hair and clothing became more elaborate. The more you grow, the more you are concerned. How do I look? How do I comb my hair? They became skillful at learning new types of play. Affection increased. And Jiva Goswami concludes saying, this makes me desire to see them. So here are some of the few like symptoms of the transitioning from Kumar to Poganda. Like broader chest, longer arms, but also Krishna and Balaram are more concerned about how do they look. No? Again, when you are 2 years old, you are not self-conscious to the point of like, I'm calm, do they put some makeup? How about my earrings? And but the more you grow, it's like, okay, where's the mirror? So somehow in the Leela, transcendentally speaking, Krishna and Balaram become more self-aware, and they start to engage in more elaborate dressing and combing and so on and so forth. And so Krishna is unfolding again in the Leela. In the Leela on earth, Krishna is unfolding from Kumar to Poganda. Krishna is changing, if you want to put it that way. Krishna is transitioning in a transcendental sense of the term. And the Brajavasis are not only allowing God to transition and to change and to surprise them, but are charmed by that. Like Jiva Goswami is saying here, affection increased. No? With Krishna becoming more Krishna, again, Krishna's transition from Kumar to Poganda, and the more he transitions, the more he becomes all that he can be. So affection increases. Along with Krishna's transitioning, affection is unfolding. Mm-hmm. The term that mostly refers in more in Upanishadic terms, the main word for God in the Upanishads is not Krishna, is Brahman. And of course, in our particular Gaudiya perspective, Krishna is Parabrahman, Purna Brahman, the ultimate form of the Absolute. But it's interesting because the word Brahman, sometimes for us is considered as impersonal. But actually, the word Brahman comes from the Sanskrit, the Dhatu Brim. And Brim means to grow and to make others grow, or to expand and to make others expand. So the very word Brahman is not something static, has no movement, it has no unfolding, but it speaks about expansiveness. So that's the main word for God in the Upanishads, which is this esoteric set of treatises. And Krishna is the supreme Brahman. So if Brahman means expansiveness and Krishna is the supreme Brahman, Krishna implies supreme expansiveness. And so here we're seeing a chapter of that, Krishna expanding from Kumar to Poganda, and all the Brajavasis like witnessing that transition and being charmed by that. Jiva mm-hmm. Goswami concluded here, this makes me desire to see them. My longing, my passion for having their darshan is increasing. Mm-hmm. So all these changes happen in Krishna and Balaram from Kumar to Poganda. So Jiva Goswami says that Yashoda notices these changes in their children, and she says, understanding that this is the quality of a person beyond infancy, no, they are no longer Kumar, I am happy. But Krishna causes me great suffering. So all the Brajavadis are like, why? We are all so happy to see your child blossoming and growing and developing all the symptoms and make him more attractive. We are more attractive. So you say you're happy, but at the same time, this you say that you're suffering. So why is that? No? So Yasoda replies, because he now desires to herd cows. And in Yasoda's psychology means, that means he will leave home and he will go into the forest. And her Vatsalya Bhav is capturing her. What will happen in the forest? All day long by himself, I won't be nearby to see what happens to him. Who knows what may happen? She starts like that. No, because before that, Krishna's calf herding. So he's herding calves. He's just in the nearby area of the house, always under the watchful eye of Yashoda. She always can keep him on the radar. But cow herding, that's more wild, right? That's an adventure. Entry into the forest for almost a whole day. For Yashoda, he knows that has to happen, but for her, it's like, again, impending separation starts to come. So here we have Krishna transitioning, again, from calf herding to cow herding. So from calf herding to cow herding, maybe most of us do not have that much experience in any of those areas, calf herding, cow herding, but you can imagine that it will be a little more complex to herd cows than to herd calves. No? So the level of complexity is increasing here now. The level of complexity increases in the Leela. So more complexity, in Srila Siddhar Maharaj's words, more need for harmony to accommodate that complexity. Complexity is nothing, it's not bad, it's just, okay, now it's not so simple, it's more complex. I need to grow to accommodate this, not to give a place to all this. And if that's done, the result will be a greater experience of rasa, of bhava, of charm. Srila Siddhar Maharaj will describe Vrindavan as that place where everything is possible. So it will be possible. All things are properly accommodated due to the nature of their affection. No matter the transitions Krishna goes through, the whole adventures he enters in, everything is properly accommodated. All complexity, new complexity is integrated. And love is increasing at every moment. Rupa Goswami will say that describe the nature of love as Ahedi Bhagati Premna Shabhava Kuti Labhavet. Say love moves like a snake, which means, I saw a few these days, by the way, they move in a crooked way. No? Snake doesn't move like straight line, it's like zigzag. So there are many ways to explain that verse, but Srila Samaraj will have said, that means that as love advances like a snake, it doesn't move like this, it moves like this. So it accommodates and encompasses and embraces all on its way and harmonizes it, like integrates everything. It's not like goes like this and neglects what's going on here, what's going on there. It's just like accommodating everything. So now comes this situation. Try to enter into this is part of the exercise. Try to enter into the psychology of the Vrajavasis. Krishna is saying, okay, I'm ready for cow herding. For Yashoda is joy and tragedy at the same time. As we'll see, for the gopis, it will be their own transition. For Krishna's friends, it implies a change for everyone. It's not only Krishna's transition. The whole village is transitioning along with him. So, because he's the center of the life of the whole village of Raj. So everything like adapts to his own transition. So we have to be willing to adjust also to Krishna's own unfolding. And that's the nature of Leela, no? The nature of Leela, the divine place. It's always like advancing in complexity at every moment. There one layer upon another layer upon another layer of complexity that needs to be integrated to enrich the relationship. It's like, try to start with relationships here. No? You get to know someone in any relationship after 5 minutes. Okay, like if someone asks me, like, do you know such person? And maybe I know that person, we are Facebook friends, but I don't know that person probably. I just know that that person exists. His name like this, and I saw his profile picture. maybe a fake profile, so I don't, maybe someone else, but so how much I do know that person, just I know the name, I know that exists, but eventually, okay, I met the person, we have a first meeting, 10 minutes on the street, okay, I know him a little bit more. But again, the more you know someone, the more complexity comes, the more different layers to accommodate in their relationship. Real, the deepest relationships we have, there are so many layers of complexity that have been integrated and accommodated. If you are not willing to enter into that game, probably you won't have any meaningful relationships in your life, because that's the price to relate, no? To enter into each other's world and to integrate and to accommodate and to adjust and to grow and transition together. So our relationship with Krishna is no exception to this rule. That's my point. And hopefully it's good news, all this that I'm saying. Yeah, we shouldn't try to make Krishna consciousness simplistic. No, I'm not trying to make it more complicated than what it is, but just to be realistic about the price of love and the price of entering into relationships, right? So again, Krishna is transitioning. And even if we are saying, okay, here is transitioning from Kumar to Poganda, cowherd into cowherd, in this unfolding of the earthly lila. But in Golok Vrindavan, he always remains eternally the same. So there's no transition to anything. I disagree. Because he's always expanding in love and beauty. He's always increasing his own personhood. In that sense, he's always transitioning to something else. There are so many statements in the scripture that say Krishna is becoming more beautiful at every moment. So he's transitioning from one level of beauty to another level of beauty, and then to another level of upgraded beauty. And so he's always becoming more of who he is. He doesn't stop being who he is. He just continues to become more Krishna. Krishna is the supreme attractive, the supreme beauty. So if the supreme beauty becomes more beautiful at every moment, and Krishna means that, and Krishna becomes more Krishna at every moment, Krishnizing himself, so to say. So this is tied with our topic here, no? How to rediscover Krishna in our life. Again, you have to allow him to transition, so to say, to the next level of beauty, to the next level of who he is, all that he can be, all that he wants to be in our lives. But to allow him to transition to his next level of beauty, next level of love. I mean, it's not that he needs our permission to do that, but to do that in our lives, we have to open the heart for that. Again, it's voluntary. So as we were saying, you know, the fact that Krishna is transitioning from calf herder to cow herder is an experience of upgraded complexity for everyone in Vrindavan. For example, for Krishna's friends, I mean, it's exciting news, of course, because they get to know, okay, from now on, we are not just moving in the perimeter of the house with a few cats, which is great, but now real adventure is happening. Now we will go into the depths of the forest just by ourselves. No? There's no mom, there's no dad. Exciting. Again, try to relate with your own experience. When you were a child and you were with your friends, but mom and dad were always like relatively on the radar. But eventually you have your first chance to meet with your friends, who knows, a little bit far away, and there's no mom and dad here. So it's like, wow, another level of rasa. So not to fully compare that with what's going on in the lila, but at least to establish some relatability between the two things. So for the friends of Krishna, this is a big transition. From tomorrow on, from the day, I mean, not yet, the day has not been established so far in the narration, but from the moment Krishna becomes a cowherd, somehow we all become cowherds and we'll join him. We'll be all day long with the cows and the friends and playing and frolicking in the forest without parental raiders. That's heaven for the kids. No? But it's a transition nonetheless. It's entering into an unknown place, the forest, right? But they are ready for the transition. For the gopis in Madhurya Bhav who love Krishna romantically, that's a transition. Because again, from many places, you feel there are so many prayers in the Bhagavatam about the gopis just thinking if Krishna goes to the forest and he will go barefoot, because that's his standard. When Krishna tries to go to the forest just for the cows with shoes, and Krishna say, I'm a cowherd, I'm protecting the cows. The cows go barefoot, no? So the cowherd has to go barefoot. No? I'm not better than them. We have to be in the same standard. So cows go barefoot, I go barefoot. So he goes barefoot, and for the gopis, it's like, just thinking the possibility of Krishna experiencing the least discomfort by walking barefoot on some pebble, you say in Vrindavan? That for them is like torture. Although that's not happening, but to think about the possibility of that is too much for them. They love Krishna so much. But that's not happening because it is described, Jiva Goswami describes how the cows, while walking in Vrindavan, they turn to dust, like soft, like sand-like dust, all the pebbles and all the stones, so to guarantee that Krishna will walk in a pleasant way. And nonetheless, the gopis are concerned. What may happen if that happens? And Yashoda, in her own Vatsalya Prem, as we already described, she will be thinking, well, Krishna, my baby, alone in the forest. Again, for a mother, if you have 45 years, you're still baby. So for her, it's like going by himself to the forest, that's too much. So it's a new level of complexity that she has to accommodate, that the Raja Gopis in Madhurya Bhav have to accommodate, that the friends of Krishna who are going with him have to, both those who go with Krishna to the forest, both who stay in the village, all of them have to accommodate this transition. They are all into the transition with Krishna. They are all part of that. But the interesting thing is the love of everyone augments in this moment. I mean, at every moment. So even here, when they may lament, oh, Krishna will be by himself, what will happen? Still their love increases. So that's the psychology of the Vrajavasis. No matter what happens, their love increases. Like we mentioned in the Govardhan Lila, when Krishna lifts the heel, he's showing this Aishwaric stuff, you know, like a 5-year, 7-year-old lifting a heel. It's like, you start to doubt who is this boy. But all the Vrajavasis were just increasing their intimate affection to him. So whatever Krishna does, Vrajavasis can only love him more. So going back to the story, so Yashoda knows, Yashoda mentions, I know Krishna wants to herd cows now. He knows the time has come. He knows he's now transitioning from Kumar to Pauganda. So she tells it to Nanda Maharaj. So Nanda Maharaj then goes and discusses, like, or inaugurates like assembly of the elder gopas in Vrindavan. So what to do with this? Because again, Nanda Maharaj also in his Vatsalya Prem is like, I want to keep Krishna with us here, but I know that he needs to transition. So the elders tell him, according to Jiva Goswami, we should not tell to restrict the voice. We should not restrict the voice. You should give permission, and by that permission, you will destroy all inauspiciousness. So it's very humanly sensitive also. No? Don't spoil your child. No? The child needs to go outside of the comfort zone. The child needs to have adventure, to experience, and as painful as it is for a parent, if you don't allow this, your child will be spoiled. If you keep your child just with you for eternity, that's not healthy. No? So we should give them permission to take that step. So when the time of transition comes, in other words, we have to embrace transition. When we in our lives feel the call for, okay, another chapter, we should take the step. Even if it feels I'm entering into an unknown room, so to say. Not to do that, I will call it sahaja. No, I have two ideas of what it means to be a sahaja. Sahaja, in one sense, is I'm trying to, how to say, go to something higher. No, to get to someone somewhere higher when it's not the moment yet for me to be there. So I'm rushing into a situation that is too big for me. But another form of sahaja means I'm being invited to go to a next higher chapter and I'm not going. And I'm staying at home instead of going to the forest, which is the call, so to say. So it's another way of not accepting where I am. which is a very important point in the Bhagavad Gita in our tradition, as simple as that is, be who you are, accept your adhikar, accept where you are. Don't try to be higher than where you are, but also don't try to remain yourself in a lower stage when you are ready for, you are ready to leave kindergarten, so to say. So don't try to stay there forever. So in this way, the Leela is showing also all this that we can relate to. When Krishna knows it's time to transition, let's transition. No second thought. And the whole village is supporting the transition, accompanying him. And the elders are advising Nanda Maharaj, don't repress your child, don't tell him no. No, all auspiciousness will come by allowing this to happen. So in this way, Nanda and the elders conclude, okay, Krishna and his friends are ready to herd cows. So Nanda Maharaj agrees, and a proper day is fixed to make the ceremony. Because again, this is not just, okay, you can herd cows. Okay, go and herd the cow. No, it needs to be properly celebrated, properly honored, properly, celebrated in ritual, invoking certain particular sacred space to create some clear impression. Okay, we are transitioning here. So we are celebrating the transitions, as we all talk in our tradition. This is called samskars. Certain rites that celebrate particular junctures in one's life, different crucial transitional moments that we need to put some light on that and celebrate it so everyone becomes aware, okay, here there is a transition, and whomever is transitioning also needs blessings to make that next bold step. So let's gather the village, so to say, and shower your blessings on the transitioning boy here. So to say, again, we need the same, although somehow in our culture we have lost a big part of that sense in our modern culture in the world. It's very important to remain aware of the importance of these transitions. So a day is fixed between Nanda Maharaj and the elders, and it's Astami. It's a day like today, a few thousand years ago, but a day like today. So Astami becomes, as we say before, Gopa Astami. The Astami, the half-moon day in which Krishna becomes officially a Gopa, a protector of cows. Gopal, protector of cows. And so far, as I say, he was Batsapal, the protector of calves. So let me share a few words of how Jiva Goswami describes the celebration. Big celebration took place in Vrindavan today. So Gopal Shampu says like this: wearing new cowherd dress. So that's another dress. Krishna was not dressing as cowherd before. So wearing new cowherd dress and protective herbs, receiving blessings from brahmanas, being worshipped with lamps on this auspicious day, Krishna departed to the forest with the cows along with Balaram. After hearing sweet songs and seeing dances to the sounds of continuous music. So Krishna's entering the forest, entering. In one sense, the forest also represents unknown territory. And Krishna is, before doing that, he's receiving blessings. Now we need blessings to enter into unknown territory. He's receiving protection, protective herbs, blessing from the elders. But there is a celebration. There is a celebration of the bold, courageous steps of entering into the new stage. Transitioning means I'm transitioning to something new. I don't know what's on the other side of the transition, but I have to transition. So if it's accompanied by proper guide and blessings, that needs to be celebrated as it's being celebrated here. Jiva Goswami continues. The arrangements for going to the forest were as follows. Putting the priests in front with songs, music, and auspicious verses, bringing the cows near and worshipping them by offering food wash and argya, feeding them sweet chickpeas, respecting them with obeisances and circumambulation, and then offering the same respects to the priests, Krishna, with his elder brother, remained standing in front of Nanda, who had his hands folded. Nanda offered him, Krishna, a jeweled stick, and Yashoda put tilak on Krishna's forehead. No? So all this is a marking of, okay, Nanda is the king of the cowherds. No? So he's coming and giving a herding stick, jewel herding stick to Krishna. Okay, this is like your, it's like, I don't know, when you give a sannyasi the tridanda, no? So some symbolic, okay, this marks that you are now on the other side. No, okay, you have accepted, you have taken this step. This is a symbol that will, so jewel stick. To show this marking Krishna with a particular type of tilak, no? That he wouldn't use before this. No? So making different symbols and reminders, okay. Transition is period is starting now. So Krishna is now a gopa. But again, many times we need ritual. Many times we need some external, quote unquote, external symbols that bring awareness to all of us. That like, okay, this is a very important moment. If we just say, okay, just go to your next step, stage, we may not be fully aware of what's actually taking place. So again, here we have God himself going through different transitions, going through rites of passage, if you want to call it that way, no? In the Gopastami, on his lila on earth. And in one way, pointing to our own transitions and rites of passage. It's not that I'm comparing myself with Krishna, but somehow Krishna lila is, again, giving us so many lessons that can be relatable to us. One, as I mentioned before, one Sanskrit word for a rite of passage will be samskara. Samskara, it's interesting how it works, because samskara, sometimes it translates as impressions, right? Like you receive certain impressions, those are called samskaras. But also samskaras is a word for these different rites that are enjoined in scripture, like for, I don't know, when a child is born, or where he's like, I don't know, first cutting of the hair, or first eating of grains, or marking different like transitional periods. Those ceremonies in themselves are called samskars, garbhadhana samskar, and so it's interesting because the same word has to do with samskar, like receiving impressions. So the samskar as a ritual is meant to create samskar in the form of creating certain impressions that stay with us and impact us in a certain way. Of course, sometimes beyond the ritual, life itself, life circumstances come to to create some scars, to initiate us. Or sometimes, as I make a play of words in English, it may be some scar, or sometimes we acquire some scars, right? So we may acquire some scars in life, and that's fine. That can be a part of the rite of passage. Because, again, when I say some scar, let's not limit that to, okay, you are born, let's celebrate with ritual. You are transitioning to become a cowherd boy, let's celebrate that with ritual. Sometimes you may need to go through an end to some transition in life, which may not be ritually celebrated, but you really feel, okay, this is a transition point. This is some scar. This is something very deep that I'm receiving as an impression. So this is a journey. It's a further journey I need to embark myself upon. You may have heard this expression, the hero's journey. This comes from, if I'm not mistaken, one of the first ones who articulate this expression is Joseph Campbell. He was a Western professor and scholar on different religions. Interestingly, the first thing I read about Krishna was in a book from him, interestingly. He will tell different stories from the East, and so a whole book with different stories from different traditions from this, and one of them was Damodar Lila. So I remember with my friend in Argentina, it's like, we read the whole book and we're like, we like this Krishna a lot. So whenever you find something else about him, let me know. Because at that time, there was no internet. As weird as that sounds. So we couldn't just like Google Krishna. It was just like, whenever you find something more about this guy, let me know because it's interesting. So we found something else about that guy, and here we are. But so I'm mentioning that because I'm somehow indebted to Joseph Campbell in my own way. So he will be one of the ones who uses this expression, the hero's journey, which he describes is kind of a template and pattern that you find in all traditions. It's like cross-cultural, cross-religion, which is departure, initiation, and return. No, in other words, you are in a certain situation, you have to leave the familiar situation and you have to go to the unknown, where you will be initiated. It doesn't necessarily mean you receive diksha, but you have to go outside of your comfort zone, outside of what's known and predictable, departure from the familiar and entering into the forest, entering into the unknown, and be initiated and receive some lesson and receive some revelation, some scar from life, and then return. You return back home, back to the familiar, but with transformed eyes. You are no longer the same person, right? Same landscape, new eyes to see the same thing transform. So he will say this type of pattern doesn't happen only once in life. So, but we are constantly invited to that type of adventure. Some other philosopher will say separation, transition, incorporation. Like you separate yourself by, sometimes even by force of circumstance, from certain group or situation, and you're invited to transition into something else and incorporate whatever gifts you have gained into. In Christianity, we'll talk a lot about the desert. So the desert is kind of like, okay, departure from the normal, from the familiar. And Buddhists will speak about emptiness. St. Francis will speak about poverty, and so on. Our tradition, we have the term akinchana, which means like, emptying yourself, basically. Devoid of, Prabhupada will translate the term like materially exhausted, which is an interesting way of saying it. When you kind of release certain ideas and certain, it's a type of death, basically, internally, as we were talking these days. A death of a certain version of me and a birth to who I need to be now. That's a constant pattern. And sometimes it's illustrated with this idea of the hero's journey. So if you want to be a hero, again, hero doesn't mean just like someone who does everything fine and easy and automatically, and they're like heroes. It's funny because in our Western culture, one of the main so-called heroes, at least from a very like superficial way, was Superman, right? Superman. And it's like when Superman started in the US, and it was like a comic at that time, there was no TV or anything. So he was literally honoring his name. He was Superman. I mean, everything, he could do everything. He was more powerful than Krishna, basically. Nobody could harm him, kill him, threaten him. Everything like boom, 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 Superman. The result of that, after a few weeks, people was bored with Superman. He's too perfect. I cannot relate to that. No adventure, no heroism, no courageousness. He just does everything easily, automatically. So almost everyone stopped reading it, the whole thing. So what did they do? They say, okay, how to keep the audience captured with the story? Let's make Superman vulnerable. So kryptonite came. There's something that can weaken him. Eventually they added some other potential, something, this may kill him. So that throws Superman into a more demanding journey, right? So to say, he can be a real hero, so to say. So in the same way, the hero's journey implies complexity, implies dealing with the unknown, implies integration of complexity, as I like to put it, implies a journey, implies a quest. Maybe times the quest begins with a question. We may have a question in our lives that becomes so intense, and that question sets us on a quest, on a journey. Eventually, we answer the question in our quest, and after some time, that becomes a new status quo. And then we need to have another question that sets us on another quest that eventually sets us on a new level of status quo, and at some point, we need to disrupt that, and so on and so forth. And that's how life moves. That's how reality unfolds. Krishna is a, this, as I like to say, he's a supreme disruptor, right? In a good sense of the term. No, don't freak out. Like, no, I don't want to relate with that guy. He seems too unreliable. He gives proper plateaus so we can take a breath, but he knows when to disrupt the status quo, because if not, it gets too boring. He wants things to remain adventurous and exciting, right? So these journeys are about that, are about transitioning into a higher version of ourselves. So one more quote from Jiva Goswami is Gopal Champu. Because again, Krishna is about to leave fully for the forest. All blessings are there, or music, decoration, jewel, stick, tilak. But now the elders want to follow Krishna. No, again, they know that they should leave them go, but they feel like, so they start to walk after Krishna and his friends toward the forest. So Jiva Goswami says, knowing that the elders wanted to follow, Krishna and Balaram discouraged them from doing so. Not like, don't spoil me. Freeing themselves from the iron chain of the elders' glances, they laughed loudly and sported with their frolicking friends, who were effulgent with their new occupation as cowherds. So here we see, you know, Krishna and his friends are totally happy celebrating the new transition, and they are entering the forest, which again, the forest, at least for us, represents unknown territory, uncharted territory, mystery, paradox, liminal space. But Krishna and his friends are celebrating that, are entering there in celebration. They are trusting. They are going together. Like Krishna, when Krishna's friends are entering Agasur, literally they are entering the mouth of a snake. And they know, but they are like, anyhow, Krishna will protect us. And they start to celebrate. So this way, transitions should be, if we deal with transitions properly, with proper blessings, with proper support, with proper accompaniment, transitioning should be worthy of celebration, not worthy of fear, not worthy of, we should know foundationally we are being accompanied, we are being blessed, we're being supported so much. So so this ties with what we were talking today, just to conclude, no? This idea of how to rediscover Krishna in our lives. In order to rediscover him, we may have to over and over again leave the familiar, set us on a hero's journey, be willing to deal with the unknown, to be confronted with what's previously unknown to us in a healthy way, in a sustainable way, according to our capacity. But we shouldn't make Krishna consciousness a comfort zone. Krishna consciousness is not meant to create comfort zone and status quo and us being trapped in that. Also not an extreme disrupting of that, but a healthy balance of that. So as we were saying the other day when I quoted Richard Rohr, that he said, the last experience of God is usually the greatest obstacle to the next experience of God. So we had an experience of Krishna, but now what comes is a new experience, which I cannot just impose my previous experience of Krishna. No. Like you cannot impose your experience with someone and pretend that person to continue being the person that he or she was when that person is ready to be something else. So we shouldn't get too accustomed to make Krishna predictable, to make Krishna controllable, to make Krishna measurable. No. The word for that in Sanskrit is maya. Maya means that which can be measured. That's very interesting, no? Because we say maya means illusion, and maya means that which can be measured, which basically means whenever you think in terms of trying to measure something, that's illusion. That's not possible. What to speak if you think about Krishna in those terms? If you try to make Krishna measurable, that's kind of the ultimate maya, right? So that's basically the message for today. No? Transition, everything remains in transition in one sense. Everything remains in movement. As the saying goes, you never bathe twice in the same stream or something like that. No, it's always flowing. It's always renewing itself. It's an ongoing journey. So let's get accustomed to live bhakti as an ongoing journey. It's not so much reaching a destination. But the journey is the destination in itself. We don't need to reach a point, an end point. That's it. Game over. Bhakti journey is over. It's a journey, ongoing journey for everyone. So in this way, as Krishna in this particular Lila of Gopastami, he's transitioning from Kumar to Poganda, now from infancy to childhood to eventually get further maturity and growth. In the same way, we are also invited to eventually transcend, move from our devotional Kumar, from our devotional infancy, and attain devotional Poganda and devotional Kishore and devotional maturity, finally. So in this way, we can find how these transitions and rites of passage that are mentioned in the Gopastami Lila can reflect the various transitions that we are invited to go through as sadhakas. Mm-hmm. And again, all this tie with our series that it's ending today on how to rediscover Krishna in our lives. So I hope that some of the things we've been sharing these last weeks help in that connection and invite us to recalibrate, as the GPS will say, recalibrating, constantly recalibrate how we continue developing our relationship with Bhagavan, and with Bhagavan by extension means with everything connected with Bhagavan. And everything is connected with Bhagavan. So learning to relate to Krishna implies by extension learning to relate to everything else and everyone else. And that's how encompassing Krishna is and Krishna consciousness is. So, thank you so much for time, attention, presence, company, inspiration. Still we have a few minutes, so if someone has any question you may like to present related to what we were talking today, comments, reflection, thoughts, Purva Paksha, whatever needs to be invoked. Yes, Guru Gai Pu. Thank you for inviting to remember that point, because that may be something that happens more than the other thing, so to say. Some of us may be respectful in not trying, like, to, in Srila Siddhar Maharaj's words, not to rush, fools rush where angels fear to tread, Srila Siddhar Maharaj will say. So we may have received that lesson clearly, and we are not trying, like, to, as we say, crash into the gates of heaven. But probably the other form of sahajism, if you want to take it that way, is it may be even more prominent. And if we are not able to identify as such, we may be continuing indulging and overindulging in that. So it's because both directions, not trying to be higher than where I am, or trying to remain in a lower situation where I'm ready for something else. Both of them are varieties of escapism, basically. You're escaping where you are and who you are. You're in denial of accepting and embracing your current situation. You are trying to be more of what you are or less than what you are, so to say. Sometimes that less part can come in the disguise of false humility also, of real humility. Like, no, I'm so falling and I'm so, like, incapable, so I cannot do that, I'm not ready for that. And actually you are ready for that, and Krishna is calling you to do that. But no, Krishna, I'm so fallen. Krishna says, yeah, you're fallen, but you're also ready for this, so come on. No, I am so fallen. That's false humility, that's not real humility. Because real humility is also encouraging to grow and to progress and to take steps in service. So I think we need to identify that version of sahajism, which in this sense for me is another word for escapism, like denying who you are, which are your present capabilities, eligibility, adhikar. Srimad Bhattan says, sve sve adhikari janishka saguna parikirtita. To acknowledge which is your adhikar is real virtue, and to not acknowledge your adhikar is actual impiety. No? So in other words, to live your life from where you are, acknowledging your present capabilities in every sense, that's real beauty, in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's word, beauty. And to live your life trying to show yourself higher than what you are, or trying to be lower than what you actually can do, that's a form of impiety, you will say. No? So, yeah. And again, we can justify that evasiveness in the name of humility, in the name of this, and we can use Krishna consciousness, Krishna bhakti to spiritual bypassing, basically. Spiritual bypassing. And as we say the other day, I don't know if it was here in some other meeting lecture, and I give lectures in Spanish, so I don't know in which lecture I say that to whom. But we were mentioning this point that although spiritual bypassing sounds like a more like modern term, speaking about escapism and justifying your stuff with spirituality. That's right there in the beginning of the Bhagavatam. Go to the first verse, I mean, second verse. First verse can be an invocation, but dharma pravita kaita botra. Stop there. No need to go even to the rest of the verse. Krishna Bhagavatam is saying dharma prajito kaitabo tra atra. Atra means here in the Bhagavatam, dharma prajito kaitabo. Cheating in the name of religion, kaitav dharma prajita, is utterly rejected. We don't buy it. So kaitav dharma, or cheating religion, or cheating in the name of religion, for me it's another word for spiritual bypassing. Just using spirituality to cheat yourself or to cheat others. So that's the inaugural line of the Bhagavatam. Just to make it clear to the reader, hey guys, if you want to read the rest of the 18,000 verses, just for you to know, this is not about spiritual bypassing. So make sure you are not doing that. That's the implication. Make sure you are not doing that, because if not, you won't get what this book is about. So, and there are so many varieties of spiritual bypassing, and all that enters into the list of anarthas we need to go through, to work on in our anartha nivritti. Not taking the steps that we need to take when it's the moment to do so, not taking the stance that we need to take in situations where I may need to speak the truth and I choose to be silent. I may need to risk certain things for the sake of my integrity and my principles, but I choose to be complacent and I'm compromising my integrity. All the things can happen. And for me, those are forms of, you are not honoring the call, so to say. You know? Krishna's flute call, one way, is symbolizing this. Like, you are being called to take a further step. You are being called to be bold and embrace a higher level of truth and commitment. If you don't do it, it's like Krishna playing the flute and you're not going. Not to make you feel bad, just like that's Krishna's flute call, some version of the flute call. The more you follow those calls, the more someday literally you will be able to hear Krishna's flute call. But if before him the flute of Krishna, all these calls come in the form of certain life circumstances that invite you to grow, that invite you to take a further step, and we don't do it, we cannot expect like to hear Krishna's Bhamsti, Venu, because that's already happening in this particular form, right? So, I mean, just study the Bhagavatam, Krishna plays the flute. That's a wild invitation. He's not playing the flute like in the living room of your house, and you just need to open the room. You go from your room. Oh, hi Krishna, you call me with the flute. No, he's playing the flute in the dead of the night, in the dense forest, in very unknown situations, and the gopis are in the midst of complex dynamics, families, commitments, and in between all that, the flute sounds. So it's so risky, it's such an adventure. It invites them to take such bold steps. So that's the nature of Krishna's call. It invites us to take bold steps, basically. That's his name, again, Urukram. Urukram is he who take bold steps. That means Urukram. And it's not just limited. No, that's Bhamandev when he did the three-step very. No, that applies to who he is. No, he's taking bold steps at every moment. So you want to relate to that person, you have to be willing to be courageous also, and have integrity, and be willing to let go of things that are getting in the way. And be willing to die to things that no longer work in the relationship of Krishna. That's the psychology of the Vrajavasis. Every time Krishna calls them, every time they have to let go of something to accept him in a deeper level. And the next time, again the flute sounds, again they have to let go of something and embrace him on a deeper level. It's ongoing. And that's how you grow in love with God and with everyone. So, but that starts here and now. You know, how much we are doing now, that here and now, with whatever comes to our lives, which is Krishna's flute sounding for us. So, yeah. Again, on a sustainable level, with this I'm not saying tomorrow you have to have gopi standard. Because I know that all the things can be taken in a way that, I start to feel bad about myself and feel like I'm nowhere in comparison to all this that Maharaj is saying. I'm so far. I'm such a rascal. Blah, blah. I'm not intending to go there, but just not to go to the extreme of denying those things as existing. You know, that's there, and we need to do that on some level that is, how to say, is sustainable enough for us, but also challenging enough for us. There has to be some level of challenge, some level of pinching. Not a pinching that is torture, but also some healthy invitation to reside outside comfort zones that go on and wander into the unknown, into the forest. And in a way that is sustainable, that we can sustain day after day. We are not going to guilt trips and feeling bad about ourselves. But just that's not the idea. No. Thank you for the reminder on that point. Yeah. Something else you might like to express? Sure. Yes.
So in this sense, does it mean in order to be in the right relationship with Krishna, it doesn't have to be the perfect relationship? Mm-hmm. He's the most perfect person. We are quite, from myself, quite far from perfection.
Yeah.
Yeah, what are the indicators that we are in the right relation? Is it just our attention going to the right?
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah,
Yeah, I will, first of all, I'd like to share one thought in connection to the word perfection, because that can be a tricky term. Now, because many times we are obsessed with the idea of perfection, and I have to be perfect, and I have to be perfect, and Krishna is perfect, and it's all about being perfect. But many times this idea of perfection starts to become like an ego thing, like being perfect. I'm no longer perfect. I'm still not perfect, but I'm perfect now, or he's perfect. He's not. And are also implying like only when I'm perfect, Krishna will like me. And it's not like that. Actually, real perfection, as once was said by a mentor of mine, real perfection does not exclude imperfection. Real perfection must include imperfection and embrace it and integrate it. So that's Krishna's perfection. Krishna is so perfect that he receives us in our imperfection, loves us in our imperfection, and from that we can progress. But perfection is not, and that's an important point for me, perfection is not a fixed maximum. As I like to say, perfection is not a fixed maximum. That you reach this, that's perfection. Now, many times in our numerical language, the number for perfection is 100, right? 100% perfect. But Krishna is generally identified with 108. So he's perfect plus. Now, and the 8, if you put it like horizontally, you have this symbol for infinity. So that's Krishna, as Stotra said, 108. He's perfection plus. So he's becoming more and more perfect. That's how Rupa Goswami describes him in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Krishna in Dwarka is Purna, perfect. Mathura, he's Purnatara. He's more perfect. In Vrindavan, he's Purnatama, most perfect. He's always perfect. But there are gradations of further perfection. So perfection is not like an end line. So I think that's important. That keeps the door open to, in one sense, you'll never attain final perfection because you can always attain more perfection. If perfection for us is being what? Loving Krishna? Okay, that's perfection for us. You can always love Krishna more. So there's no limit to perfection, right? Because if not, we can see perfection in a very imperfect way, in a very limited way. Okay, this is perfection, it's over. Of course, you can say perfection is when you develop Prem Bhakti, you enter Golok Vrindavan, fine, but that's not an end point. That continues to unfold eternally, forever. So I think that's one important thing in connection to perfection. So we don't make the term perfection like something that limits us or like creates this idea of I have to work and deserve and I become perfect and then Krishna loves me. And So I will say that how to be perfect in perfect, quote unquote, in our relationship with Krishna, and how to remain open to that is, first of all, to acknowledge your imperfection, your present imperfection, whatever that may be, your present situation, what we were talking a minute ago. Don't try to be more than what you are. Also, don't try to be less. Try to be who you are and open to further growth. And try to relate to Krishna from that place. No, we don't need to impress Krishna. Right? Because sometimes the idea of perfection has to do also with that. I have to perform in a better way to impress Krishna. Krishna doesn't need to be impressed. Krishna already loves everyone unconditionally. So I think that's very healthy, healing foundation to approach our relationship with Krishna. Not so much he doesn't love me, he doesn't like me, he's totally unaware of me, until and unless I become perfect. That's such an exhausting way of thinking. Try to imagine a relationship with someone here when you want to love the person you are trying to love, but the person is like, I don't know you, I don't care for you, I don't love you, and call me when you are perfect and I'll show up for you. And it's like, that sounds toxic. You will end up doing therapy. You will need to recover from that relationship. So we don't want to have that relationship with Krishna. So I think it's, again, as I said before, a healthy relationship with Krishna is one in which we are very clear about all this unhealthy potential stuff. We are trying to clear that from our past. So we are not projecting on Krishna something that he is not. I don't want to impose my own my own distortions of Krishna. No? That's not so gentle to do with him. No? Krishna, he doesn't love me, he doesn't like me, and I'm projecting all of that on him. That's not very nice. So accepting, he already loves me, he already accepted me fully for who I am in all my fragility, vulnerability, limitation. So when I show up for him, when I try to address him, I have to present myself for, I have to be fully honest where I am and be okay with that in front of him. No need to fake it, but trying to be as transparent as possible. As I like to make the place of words, in English you have this phrase, fake it till you make it. No, don't do it. I like to change fake it and I like to say naked till you make it. No, naked in the sense we have to present with Krishna, in front of Krishna as naked as we can. Transparent. That's a Gopi Bastra Harana Lila. We didn't have time to go there. But then, as we said the other day, when Krishna's taking the cloth from the gopis and inviting them to come one after one, naked. In one sense, the lesson there for us as sadhakas is Krishna is very happy when we are naked in front of him. Internally naked, like honest, not trying to put masks, not trying to cover our stuff and imperfection, but this who am I, you know, as sincerely as possible. And I know you love me and you accept me. And on that foundation, I have hope that I can love you back. No? Because you are loving me. So because you love me, that means somehow I'm lovable. So the fact that I'm, then to know, to discover that I'm lovable, gives me the strength and hope to love back someone. That's an important point that shouldn't be underestimated. If we don't think we are lovable, probably we won't dare to love anyone. Because you will think, who am I to love anyone? I'm not lovable. I'm not worthy of that. But when you know Krishna really loves you, that's so empowering. So I can dare to love him back. So I think that's one of the best ways to approach Bhagavan. And then again, to remain open to allow Krishna to be all that he can be in our life. You know, to have daily... And that's part of how that should be part, in my opinion, part of our sadhana, internal discipline. Like every day, try to look: am I putting Krishna in a box? No, I'm like, okay, this is Krishna, and I'm keeping him there day after day after day, and I make him predictable, measurable, controllable. That's not Krishna. No? That's my outdated version of Krishna that I kept in a box, and I think that's still him. So we have on a daily basis to break the box, so to say, and to allow Krishna to be all that he can be today and tomorrow and the day after tomorrow. So, and I would say with proper company, proper also guidance, proper sadhus will also give us this idea of ever fresh. You know, Krishna is ever fresh. Krishna consciousness is ever fresh. There is one nice, let me share with you one nice quote from Srila Prabhupada in the Nectar of Devotion. Very simple, but he says, God's name is always chanted by millions of devotees, but those devotees never become saturated. Instead of becoming disinterested in thinking of God and in chanting his holy name, the devotees get newer and newer impetus to continue the process. Therefore, God and his name, fame, qualities, and everything in relationship with him is ever fresh. So that's the nature of Krishna. That's the nature of the name of Krishna. That's the nature of bhakti, ever fresh. But we have to be properly connected to not lose sight of that ever freshness. Because if not, everything starts to become stagnant, stale, predictable, putting things in boxes, controllable, and we made of something very dynamic and alive, like it's almost like a formula, predictable formula, and that's when Krishna consciousness starts to become boring. But if it becomes boring, then it's not Krishna consciousness. That's the thing. It's something else. Because by nature, Krishna consciousness, bhakti is ever fresh. So yeah. Try day to day to be creative in how we stay in that place of newness and openness. It's healthy to spend some time in solitude, in prayer, while chanting or meditating, like opening myself. Okay, who Krishna you want to be for me today? Trying to invite him, receive him. Atiti devo bhavam. Tritiri Upanishad says. You should receive an uninvited guest as if he were God himself. What if God himself is the uninvited guest? Every day he's coming as a guest, uninvited many times. So he knocks. I mean, he's not like just jumping, breaking everything and capturing, but he comes as an uninvited guest. But do we open the door or not? Or we tell from the inside, no, there's nobody home today. So that's our part. That's what comes, that came today. Thank you. Okay, something else before closing the curtain? We have a few more minutes. Maharani.
Thank you very much for those wonderful class. It takes a huge amount of courage to little and even to face these concerns. This is done in the paragraph, because this is to your interview with Canada Control, just as an accident. That's the same as what you want to do. So that's why I'm here to because it's so wonderful to hear it. Because it's my hearing is gone for me anyway. And the first time I went through this process 15 years ago, I lost everything, all my friends. My position, standing, everything was I just lost everything. If I hadn't had, I felt like I'm my Catholic Church at the time. People I met would have walked me through this darkness, that's like spiritual war, and kidding, and all those incredible people I met. It was like, I wouldn't have been seeing with discussion at that time. I couldn't have shared that with anyone. And it was very dark, and all these journeys. So I just, if we don't have a huge amount of support for this, that's what I feel. If we don't stay in the box and believe in a certain way, we're seen maybe as deviants or it's just very, I found it very spiritual. And I'm finding it steady because Krishna seems to, just when I'm starting to feel comfortable, it starts again. Like it's getting dynamical. It's moving. So I'm lacking in courage. I found it very painful. And just to know how to navigate, you know,
Yeah, I don't really have enough words to be able to say much words, but I'm just really grateful for what I found in your teachings, and I'm here now listening to you, and that's got me through a lot of time in my life. So, yeah, last night we talked probably about the liminal space, and it's a very difficult place, and how to navigate it, and
Yeah. Thank you for sharing. And I won't say it's easy. I will never say it's easy. And I've been there a few times. I'm there in some way still. But I think we have to make peace with liminality. You know, we have to make peace with the unknown, and we have to understand that many times these uncomfortable spaces and situations are uncomfortable as long as we want to keep everything under our control and keep everything predictable and keep everything in certain order, working in certain way according to our own sweet will, quote unquote. And the more we learn to release, to learn to press the release button, we can be more free and we can be more accepting and we can learn to trust how, especially in those moments of difficulty or that we perceive at least as difficult, because some other people may not perceive that as difficult, but we perceive it. And how in those moments also Krishna not only remains present, but becomes specially present. The other day I was reading a verse, I think, from Narad Panchayatra. One of many verses similar to those that may be traumatizing for some devotees, if they are read literally, probably, at least in some cases where Krishna says, when someone loses, if you are like, well, let me read the verse directly, more practically, I put it. So it says like this. This one, from Narada Pancharatra. Leaving one's homeland, not like exile, a severe disease, a dispute between friends, loss of wealth, and disrespect are signs of my grace. So again, you have to know how to deal with those statements, because you can develop a wrong idea about Krishna again. Not like, what does it mean? For me, what came immediately when I heard the verse was not so much like, Krishna is literally orchestrating those things and give me mercy. But it's more like whenever you happen to be going through those things, his grace becomes specially available. He becomes specially present. He extends his grace to compensate the loss, to compensate the pain, the suffering. So for me, all these heavy, difficult situations, at the end of the day, exist to prove that love still is more powerful than all that. So no matter how much suffering and trauma, I mean, I don't want to sound insensitive when saying that, because I've gone through my own stuff as well, but no matter how difficulties we have gone through, at the end of the day, love remains being the most powerful force in the universe. So the lesson many times is, despite all that suffering, love remains as available and more available than always. And many times pain and suffering puts us in a very vulnerable situation and open. Pain opens the heart for further receptivity. I'm not promoting pain. I'm just saying when that happens, it's happening. There's something happening there, and it's not just pain. There's something else apart from the pain. Pain is there, and we acknowledge the pain, and we shouldn't be like, forget about the pain. I'm not saying that. But that's not the whole story. That's my point, right? So yeah, being in liminal space is complicated, but it's necessary. Many things that need to die. It feels like death. It's literally death. Death. But death takes to birth. So let's not forget, it's not just death. No? Death is complementary with death. So we have to die so many times before dying. Christian saints also will talk about dying before dying. No. Because if we don't die before dying, when we die, we cannot see that particular death as what it actually is. If you have died before dying, paradoxically, the moment of death is life. No, the biological death becomes a portal to eternity. But for that, you have to die before dying. No? Prayer has a lot to do with that. Richard Rohr will say prayer is a training in dying. Right? Every time you enter into the inner, your inner chamber to pray, you are entering to a place, you are trying to die to something. But again, not only dying, being born to something else. Being born to something else. So, and I agree that the journey is personal. You have to enter the journey, but at the same time, it's so important to have some journey companions that understand what we are going through, that speak the same language, that understand the paradoxes and the things that happen in these mysterious places. That makes the journey more sustainable, so to say. And we need that. No? One part we can only ask, we can do that journey, but at the same time, not like the Dandavat Parikram. You mentioned this idea of Dandavat Parikram that came in the conversation with Pranada. I don't remember, because we recorded that podcast like when I was in Sweden, so that was like 3 months ago, but it was shared the other day. So life as a Dandavat Parikram, we were saying, yeah, because yeah, we did this Dandavat Parikram last year to Govardhan, and yeah, in one sense it was, I had to do it myself. No, I cannot expect, can you do the Dandavat Parikram for me? But at the same time, we were in a team, so that, to have the family together with you, and that gave so much support and empowerment for me to do my thing. So I have to do my thing, but I need all of you close, giving blessings and support to do my thing. As Krishna, he has to enter the forest himself, but he has all the elders of Brajavasi giving him blessings to enter the forest, to enter the liminal space. So it's difficult, but yes, I like to say it's not impossible. It's not easy. And the opposite of easy is, I say that a few times, the opposite of easy is impossible, not difficult. The opposite of easy is impossible. Difficult is a middle point. So we want the middle point. We want to thread the middle path. Easy is boring. Impossible is frustrating. So we need difficult. Something that is challenging us enough so we grow what we need to grow. We die to what we need to die, and we are born to what we need to be born. So, thanks so much to all of you for being here. It has been a pleasure again to share with all of you these last weeks in this series and beyond the series. Sri Gopastami ki jai, Sri Sachinandan Gaur Hari ki jai, Sri Harinam Prabhu ki jai, Gaur Bhaktavrinda ki jai, Gaur Premanand Hari Bol. Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyaiva Cha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo. Ananta Koti Vaishnavrinda ki jai, Gaur Hari Bol.